And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So I'm going to start off, and this is the topic especially for Brian Carroll. More Brian Carroll than you, Cheddar, because I don't know if you're on Twitter or not. Maybe you are incognito or something, like a lot of managers are. They don't admit they're on it. But Brian is very sensitive about this black card topic. So we have to, and to be honest, I wasn't even sure if I was going to put it on it, but I saw a quote from Ryan O'Dwyer and I thought it was madness. And I talked up Ryan O'Dwyer last year because he tipped Laois to get out of the Joe McDonagh and take out another team. And this one, I can't let this slide by Ryan. So he says, I don't think there are any players who will go out there and purposely do the cynical things that people are talking about at the highest level. Surely to God, Brian, you cannot agree with that naivety.
I can't fully agree. No, I understand his sentiment. And traditionally, I suppose, people didn't go out with the intent to cynically foul, and a lot of things just happened instinctively or in a moment where you just decided, right, I've got to take this guy down, he's bearing down in goal, or whatever the foul may be. But it has definitely, with certain teams, become more systematic in what they're at. And I think that's quite obvious. So I take his point. Like, remember, like, Ryan's stopped playing intercounty hurling a couple of years, same as myself, and that, like, it has even moved on even in those couple of years. So, you know, I suppose deliberate fouls, like, aren't all deliberate fouls cynical, really? You know, there is unintentional fouls. They're different, obviously, but to me, every sort of foul is actually, any deliberate foul is cynical in itself. I know I've read during the week, and it keeps being quoted, about Tipperary's approach in the All-Ireland last year, where I think the first six or seven scores that Kilkenny got, they were all systematically, they were stopping them from 30, 40 metres out and not letting them through and goal. But is that what every team up and down the country, you know, attests to actually do? Make sure there's no goal scored today, lads. You know, do whatever it takes. So I don't really count that as cynical play. I think, like, is that not just defending? Is that what the nature is? Obviously, you try to take the ball off them initially, but you're not going to just let them walk the ball into the net, or else, you know, the game isn't what we want it to be, essentially. So yeah, a little bit of maybe naivety from Ryan in that perspective.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, here's the thing, and it looks like the black card could come in, Cheddar, because that, when you know, when these things start getting mooted, you know, like, especially when it's, if it's certain people that's mooting them, i.e. Croke Park, you know, there's a good chance
and
that these,
the media.
And yeah, well, there's a lot of people on the, well, there's a lot of hurling people are pushing back against it, whether it'll be any good or not. But here's the thing that I said on Monday, is that the black card in football got terrible bad press, because in football, counter-attacking football was a big thing. So if you turn over the ball on your, on the opposition's 45, a foul there is a really good foul to stop the counter-attack, and it's cynical, and you know what you're doing. In hurling, that foul isn't there. Number one, there isn't really counter-attacking hurling as much, and a foul anywhere around that 45 area, it could be a point. So there's no real there's not the same reward for it. So I don't think we'll see the number of black cards in hurling. The other point is that referees in hurling do not ref the game the same way as football referees. They won't be dishing out black cards for everything, or they'll be like the devil. You know, now I know there'll be assessors and things like that. So there's two points. So would there be an appetite, Cheddar, for a black card preventing a goal-scoring opportunity? And if the referees were to police that, you wouldn't see it getting as bad a press as, you know, lads walking in big games for, you know, innocuous fouls like happened in football. I think that's probably the worry from hurling people, is for it to turn into a bit of a farce like it did in football.
I suppose there's a couple of points to that, Willie. Look, first of all, do not bring it in.
Right.
Do not. This is madness. And I'll certainly, you know, you don't need to quote Brian Cody or John Kiley, but if you're looking for two people that rarely speak up about things, but that speak up eloquently about things when they think something is wrong, both of them have said this, and there's a number of other people as well. Let's just consider it for a minute. We're praising hurling because of the pace of the game, the speed of the game, and, you know, it's very, very different to football. and the movement of the ball and the movement of the players and so on is very different. And one of the reasons that we talk it up is because of the flow of the game and the pace of it. And you know, you're going to black card somebody and take it out, take them out of it. I can say to you with certainty that you take out a back like that and you're going to change the course of the game. Now, yeah, the All-Ireland semi-final and final last year probably maybe disagrees with my point a little bit, but I can tell you if the black card comes in, management will be looking at how can we isolate their, you know, their lack of players and that type of thing, and it'll change the course of the game hugely.
JJ did say on Monday that 10 minutes with a man down in hurling is a lot different than 10 minutes
it's being a massive difference altogether. And bear in mind, you know, that's the point I'm really making to back that up, Willie, is that at the minute managers don't prepare or rehearse to play like that, because generally speaking there's not a need. You will always rehearse to be a man down or vice versa, but not to this extent. And when they do, the difference then will be much, much bigger, I think. And I think, you know, I just think this is, first of all, there's two things. It's going back to football. Is it needed in hurling? No, it's not. I've read the media stuff on it, and I've also read what Brian has said, and maybe there's an alternative here. Rather than giving the black card, maybe if the referee assesses that it's an absolute deliberate foul and a cynical foul, that there's a 2-point awarded for a free like that. I don't know, but anything that slows down the game, changes the course of the game, takes players off the field, please don't do it. And I'll say to anybody that goes to that Congress on this, stand up and as hurling people and say, we do not want this. Do not vote this in over our heads.
So this is an important distinction here now, and it's very important in that you're agreeing that a cynical foul should be punished. So it's the black card you're against rather than a punishment for being cynical.
Absolutely. And Willie, I might talk a little bit more on that. I think, and I've spoken a lot about hurling over the last couple of years, I think hurling will go towards a much more tactical game when you will make use of all of these things. And, you know, Brian has explained it earlier on, it'll be probably to your benefit to take somebody down to stop the move, a tactical move. In other words, you're pinging a pass, maybe 3 passes through the field to create a score on the opposite side. And it might make sense to stop that phase of play early in the phase. So you may see a little bit more of this. And I'm not closed to not, you know, I'm not just closing my eyes to it here and saying don't do anything, but do not do this. I'll be honest with you, I don't look at Gaelic football anymore. And I was a great, I'm a hurling man, obviously, but I'm a GAA man also, and I would go to a huge amount of football matches. And I don't even look at it anymore. I just find it just doesn't interest me anymore the way the game has gone. And if that's the way hurling is going to go, are you going to do the same, turn away a lot of people to hurling as well? Is there a need for this particular type of punishment? No, there's not. There may be in the near future, so let's not close our eyes to it, but have a different type of punishment. And that may very well be a 2-point penalty for an absolute deliberate free based on the referee's assessment of that. And if you think of it for a minute, Owen Murphy in the role, and you cannot do that type of cynical foul outside of the 21 of the opposition, because these guys are pinted at the minute. And, you know, most teams will have that quality free taker in their ranks. So I don't know, look at something different, but do not do this.
Yeah, I think I'm happy, Brian, that are you on the same boat as that you accept there needs to be a punishment? Because here's the example we used on Monday, Brian, was Billy Ryan's goal. So he went through and goal, scored a great goal. But is Donoghue, the cornerback, tried to trip him up with a hurley. Now, if he had been successful and tripped up Billy Ryan, there's no goal there, to get it free. And Billy Ryan gets a yellow card. He got one anyways. But do you see the point? Like, I mean, he should have been punished more severely than if, say, for example, he had tripped Billy Ryan. He should have been punished more severely for stopping that goal scoring opportunity than just than a point would have happened. Do you get me? And there is hurlers doing this.
Yeah, no, there is. And I don't think anyone's denying that they're doing it. You know, like, there is goal scoring opportunities, and we all know late in the game you'll stop someone outside the 21 to make sure you give away a 21 yard free, and the chances of scoring a 21 yard free are pretty slim, as opposed to allowing them into the goal. But if you bring in, like, what the vast majority of hurling people now are proposing, a similar type rule, maybe just a couple of different variations, but basically a cynical foul maybe inside the 21 becomes automatically a penalty. you know, and it becomes that one-on-one goal-scoring opportunity. Like, there's a serious punishment if for instance, Simon Dunne had to pull down Billy Ryan the other day. I would extend it further and maybe include the D in that, because often those goal-scoring opportunities come where a player is after breaking through the centre and a back is making sure that he pulls him down. So I'd include the D in terms of a penalty opportunity. But there's a couple of things I just want to point out for a second. Number one, The sin bin was trialled in 2005, because I was still playing myself. I was actually sin binned myself in 2005.
What did you do?
I actually, would you believe this? Kevin Dowd, brother of Tommy Dowd, who used to play for Meath, we were playing him in Division 2 in 2005. He came in and turned me upside down with a shoulder and burst me through the helmet. I actually got 3 stitches in the side of the head through the helmet, and I was a judge for over carrying because I was on the ground with the ball in my hand. So I got up and I let the referee know what I thought of it. So I got a yellow card, and the trial at that time was, if you got a yellow card, you were sin bin for 10 minutes. Okay. So not alone did I give away a free, I got 3 stitches and I got 10 minutes to feel sorry for myself. So
this is the root of this opposition.
I'm holding that grudge ever since then. No, like, honestly, that was trial in 2005, and like, there was no appetite for it. It ruined games at the time. So, as I said, this was tried before. Number two, my other main issue with this is the fact that if Congress vote this in, as far as I'm aware, this automatically comes in for championship. Like, we have not even trialled it since 2005. Well, like, what? How could that be possible?
I have to say, I've between JJ, Damien, Cheddar, yourself, and hurling people, because I'm not, you're winning me over on this, because you're also against it, and the punishment of losing a lad for 10 minutes in a game, a hurling game, could be over, and you're all accepting that cynical play is an issue, and you're suggesting other punishments for it. So, like, I'm on your side now, kind of.
But my thing as well, Colm, is trial it. You know, don't make it a rule. Like, they have not trialled the black card. Do you know, like, they have not tried whatever their variation of it is. Like, can we not trial in the league? That's what the whole purpose of the league is. Do you know, it's to trial these things. They've done that in football and whatever. They were happy with doing what they're doing. But as you said, it was a farce when it came in at first. An absolute farce. And football had their own issues. A lot of that was for third man blocking the runs out the field, and they were turning into scraps. And, you know, like, and as you said, it ruined a lot of big games. And we don't want that in Ireland.
It ruined a lot of big games because referees were giving them too liberally, I suppose, Cheddar. Yeah. And that's a lot of the reason. So look, we'll move off that anyways. And Jason, I would be very
just really on that point. Like, you make a good point there. Like, you know, we're trying to take pressure off the referees. Now you're putting added pressure on them to make a decision like that in a massive game. And what I'm a little bit surprised at, I'm assuming John Kiely and Brian Cody spoke because this matter wasn't discussed with them. Surely of something of such importance, that some key people in the organisation, that this thing would have been discussed with him and maybe asked, are there alternatives here? First of all, recognise that there is an issue and that we need to sort it and look at the right punishment or the right solution to the problem, I suppose. This is not it. And you know, I'm going to go back to that point. You know, anybody who's at this Congress who is a hurling person, if you believe this, stand up and say so and don't just acquiesce and be passive about it.
Right, okay, that's fair enough. So the next one is a motion from the Gorey Neavena Club, a motion to Congress. I thought this was an interesting one. Listen, sure, there's all sorts of harebrained motions go to Congress. There's one coming from, is it Clare looking for Joe Brawley to be reinstated from RT?
That's actually County Council.
That's a County Council or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that sum up the public sector in one go, wouldn't it? If there's nothing better to be doing. Anyways, we won't get it
easy.
Go there now, Willie.
A man who worked in it all his life and a current public sector employee. I'm talking to the wrong audience. But anyways, the motion from Gorey is that only 2 players and 1 management member can talk with the match official. So D O'Keefe, this was in the Examiner, John Fogarty had it, he must have talked to D after the game at the weekend against Kilkenny, and he says the referees are getting so much hardship, they're getting shouted at from the line, they're trying to listen in their ear from the linesmen, They're getting lads all over the pitch roaring at them as well. I think someone has something has to be given there. Maybe one or two talking to him about what's going on at the pitch is the way to go. This is a rugby thing, Cheddar. God, I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't think GAA players are disciplined enough for that. Like, I mean, and what if an incident happens to the other end of the field? Does your captain from full back have to run all the way down to talk to the ref? The pitch is too big for that kind of nonsense to be going on. For me, I don't see how that's any bit of a runner.
I know, it's difficult to see how that would work. Look, it would be helpful, I think, to referees. I think the big issue really is, when you see referees that communicate well with managers and players, there's rarely an issue about it.
Yeah.
When you see referees that don't communicate well with management teams and with players, and then that, generally speaking, leads to frustration and shouting and so on. Interestingly, I was surprised. I was interested to see that Dee said that, in particular the issue about that they're getting shouted at from the line. And I'm wondering, is Davey have a word with him at the next training session here?
He was at it again, actually, Davey, in the Kilkenny game, Brian. Did you notice that? He was, is he shouting, yeah, what did I say?
The irony of this coming from Wexford, I think this is brilliant. Oh, Lord.
So it's not a runner, though, is it?
I don't think it's a runner either, being honest. As you said, look, in rugby, they all kind of line up and face each other, per se, so they're always close enough to where the referee is or the moments. Yeah, so like, I can't see how that. I know they're saying two players, and that mean one forward or one back or whatever. But look, I think Cheddar summed it up perfectly, honestly. Good referees tend to communicate well, the three players with respect.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the referee's slogan, give respect, get respect. Yeah. And that, in essence, does start referees. And without branding all the club referees the same way, that's where a lot of it starts, isn't it? When you see at a club level, some of the referees, they start giving abuse back to players and back to management. And that's where it kind of descends into a bit of a farce. To me, I think the good referees, they automatically kind of stamp that stuff out.
It's just like teachers in school, I suppose, Cheddar, like the good ones that you respect and that communicate well never get any hassle off the students. And the ones that don't do those, their lives are made of misery.
Well, it's a part of, I suppose, wider issues in society. It's a lack of respect for authority that has changed massively only in the last 10 years. And, that's what we're seeing actually on the field a little bit as well. Incidentally, I just wouldn't have time for, I'd pop my hand here and say, am I across the line here a couple of times myself or too many times myself? But look, you've got to consider as well, referees are an integral part of the game. We simply wouldn't have the games we have without them. And we've got to accept also that, sometimes they get things right and sometimes they get things wrong. We have had this discussion before. Players get it wrong. Managers get it wrong sometimes. And sometimes we do have to have a little bit more respect for them. And I go back to a little point, Brian, maybe last week. I actually did think, we just talked about that point about rules. If you're going to have rules, you've got to referee by rules, not what you think should be right. And I would disagree, Brian, with you maybe last week. I thought Niall O'Leary did flick back the hurley. The rule is there that once you do that with the hurley, that you are off. And I think he accepted it himself, just looking at the picture of that himself, he accepted it. But the point I'm making is that you and I, and certainly back in my time, a flick back at the hurley wouldn't have even deserved a second look, whereas now it is the rule. And if the rules are there, I think people who comment have a particular responsibility, and people certainly in the media have a particular responsibility to back up referees. If there's a rule there, and if it looks pretty like that he got it right, we need to just stand up and say it and back the referee on that. Now, I do accept that there are times when you'd be scratching your head about what did the referee see there that nobody else appeared to have seen, and maybe it's okay to say that clearly as well. But I think media in general, I don't mean media as in journalists, I mean everybody that's involved here about commenting on the games, have a little bit of responsibility to stand back for a second and say, look, it was a foul, and according to the rule book, the referee is right, even though you and I and everybody else that likes to see the game flow might disagree with that. And I think we just need to accept that and have a little bit more respect for referees as we go along. And I'm going to finish what I'm going to say is I'm probably the wrong person to have said that.
I think everybody is. It's hard not to. You don't think of the referees as as human beings.
I think to the point I was making, Willie. I think if the communication is good with referees, you have automatic respect, and it's just good behaviours. And I can say that with certainty from my own experiences, that referees will come to you before the game. They will establish communication with you. They will say the things that they're looking for in the game. And look, you can't really
crib then about something that happens in front of you and you disagree with it. If you've been told about it beforehand, it's up to you to ensure that your players comply with whatever the referee is looking at.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to finish up with some climate change here, lads, for the two of you. So it's climate change in the league. So I had this on the football show. Of the 77 Alliance Football and Hurling Leagues postponed in the last 11 years due to weather, 66 have happened since 2017. So we know that, you know, the climate is becoming changeable, to say it least, unless, you know, maybe if you're like one of the Healy Rays, if you pray harder to God who controls the weather, we might be, maybe GAA people aren't praying enough in February. But right, so in 2017 there was four cancelled. 2018 the Beast from the East was around and there was 46 games cancelled. 2019 8, 2020 so far 8, and there could be more of that on top of that. The point I suppose I'm making from this is I'm very critical of the hurling calendar now. I think the championship is fantastic, but I think everything before May is a little bit of a waste of time, and the league has become a warm-up competition and there's too many games that don't really mean anything. So, and because there's no real wriggle room, Brian, and this is the third year in a row that there's no wriggle room has made the league final go a week later, why on earth are they continuing with a league that means nothing when it's followed by a league that means everything? Why not change it to like a cup competition, or maybe bring the provincials back and play them then and start the year with the provincials, or something to alleviate the seven games in 8 weeks, and in the time of the year where this issue is not going to get any better. If anything, it's going to get worse.
Yeah,
the weather I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's a good few points within there now. First and foremost, the league is starting earlier. It's starting in January as opposed to mid to late February.
Right.
And even you can go back to Cheddar's time when it used to be played. Somebody was played in October and November,
yeah,
to play some of the games, and it was spread out over the year. So the league, you know, from that perspective, it is tighter. They've only one weekend off in terms of wiggle room, and that was for the Fitzgibbon semi-finals. No longer the Fitzgibbon final, that's been pushed to Wednesday, as we know. So it's squeezed. The reason for that is because they're trying to leave April free for club month. Some counties have done that traditionally. It's been enforced on them, and certain counties are really railing against that. So it all comes back to the overall calendar issue, essentially. Therein lies the nub of the whole thing. And we can see how long that process has taken to try and fix that. The club players association have walked out of that, we'll say, negotiations, for want of a better word. They're not happy with how they perceive that.
They're only the football championship, though, Les. There's no debate on the hurling championship. Do you know what I mean? And the hurling championship is a waste of time for half the year.
It's the calendar years in trying to fit it all into 1 year, as in, i.e., should club be actually played in April, or should it be pushed to maybe 2 6-month championships,
per se,
as opposed to the actual structure? Because that has a bearing on how things happen, even in hurling. I accept your point then, because there's a lot of points in this. The league, probably the one thing I do with the league at the moment is change the quarterfinals. I don't think there's a huge need or appetite for quarterfinals, particularly the way the two groups gone. We're talking about Division 1 here, obviously. So I don't think there's a need for quarterfinals. I think semifinals would suffice. And that would obviously free up another week in these cases where you have this weather situation. And as you said, in terms of your overall championship structure, in terms of two groups of five, which is playing on a league basis, I obviously have completely different views on how that should be played. I think we're going away from kind of the overall point. So I don't know, unless Cheddar has anything to pick up on that.
No, I do agree with you, Brian. It is a games programme, or an annual games programme planning issue. I think there's a couple of little things in it, and a couple of little nuances in that as well. First of all, safety of players is paramount. I think there's been a couple of games went on, including maybe a Clare Leash game went on, but there was definitely a game went on in Ennis last year, I think, in Thunder and Lightning, that you'd be a little bit concerned that this was a safety.
That was Cork Clare, and that was in the summer.
Cork Clare. You know, so I think there's a couple of things here that simply just, you know, you do not allow these things to happen. I think there's another issue, obviously, is insurance issues and so on, so on. Does your insurance cover all of these? There's a lot of little things like that, you know, maybe there's more to it than we see. And of course, the third thing is hurling. You know, the nature of the game and the size of the litter and all of that is very, very different to football. You know, can the game actually go ahead in muddy conditions? Now, pitches are much, much better than they were years ago. And Brian is right. I certainly remember matches going on in November, December. And look, they weren't matches at all. They were just arm wrestles, really, I suppose. And I do agree with Brian's point. I think the quarterfinals, I just don't see a need for them. I think if that, you know, it took one weekend out of it and gave a little bit of wriggle room here, I think it would be good. But look, you can't plan for everything either, you know. I accept that from the GA, but I think it's part of the wider issue here about the whole annual games programme for club and for county. And I think if the right-minded people got around that and found solutions to that to be able to support a good club championship, and I do think it needs to go on throughout the year, maybe in two parts, Brian, in each county, but of course you'd have to look at county-by-county basis as well. But I think if the right people got around that and fixed that, you would also fix a lot of the other issues and then leave a little bit of wriggle room that, look, if we got a bad weekend or something like that, well, we have a weekend to play with or 2 weekends to play with.
Yeah. So just to come in there, there's definitely improvements can be made to the hurling year. But this is a criticism I have of hurling pundits, Brian. I'm going to throw this to you. They're all so positive about their game. They don't rattle enough cages to get the enough changes through. Like, everybody was giving out blue murder about the football structure, and that looks like it's going to be changed. But because hurling tends to say everything's going along fine, and that's a trend amongst a lot of hurling people, there's nothing wrong with it. This is a big problem for me in the hurling year. This league the hurling year doesn't take off. There's no news on any of the media. There's nothing goes on until May. And that's half the season. You're trying to find talking points.
I understand that, but it does come back to the structure of the championship essentially, because the Munster and Leinster councils changed the structure to make those championships into leagues, and they say there's an appetite for that. And obviously, it does point towards the fact that the Joe McDonagh works, and we certainly have much better championships. As a result of that, is it the fairest and best championship out there in terms of fairest, in terms of the fact that there are 16 counties? I personally wouldn't agree. You know, I've often had my tuppence worth in this. I think the provincial championship should go back to knockout. There's no appetite for that anymore, and I would play a much fairer system of 16 teams, four groups of four
for the All Ireland.
For the All-Ireland series, and the top two go into A quarterfinals, and the bottom two in each group go into the B quarterfinals. And I just think that would be a much better system. And yeah, we see something similar promoted in football. It's just it's very slow to get change. And as long as we have the unfairness, is what I'll say it. The only way of saying it, and you know I've harped on about this point, with the Munster Championship and how hard it is for the likes of Kerry to ever play in Munster. You know, they would have to win Joe McDonagh and win a playoff, in order to get into Munster.
Yeah,
and we have Leinster now proposing, in fairness to Leinster, proposing a six-team Leinster, a much fairer system. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to give more teams within Leinster an opportunity. Leinster, I'm constantly harping on about this, but they have been a much fairer county or province in that perspective. They've allowed Antrim into it. They've allowed Galway into it. They allowed Kerry to play in preliminary Leinster Championship. So they did, and so they are much more, open to the idea of that hurling is for everyone, as opposed to the sanctity of Munster Championship and the five big guns. Yeah. So, therein lies my issue. I'm probably from Offaly, and it sounds like I'm harping on about Offaly are so far down, they're inconsequential in this debate at the moment. So in a way, I'm kind of glad of that.
A knockout provincial championship in March, Cheddar, followed by an All-Ireland League, two groups of eight from April until middle of July or the end of July. That sounds all right to me.
No, that certainly is an alternative that would certainly need to be explored.
That's a good call as well. Yeah, like there's loads of variations you could do with that. Mm.
Very simple year.
There is, yes. And I think, yeah, I think that, you know, that's what I'm sort of saying earlier on, that I'd be proposing Brian here straight away for this committee. But there certainly is, to get a right group of people together, and just, I hate the cliches of thinking outside the box, but think outside the box and don't just stick because the Munster Council is traditional and the Leinster Council is traditional or whoever else. And this is the way we always did it. Is there a better way? I don't think that has been explored properly. And I think it could be better. And just bear in mind, Willie, you made the point at the start that the hurling people are always happy. We look, the decision that was made about restructuring of the leagues this year was a very, very poor decision. And, you know, the mere fact that there's quarterfinals there, Brian, I'm assuming is driven by the top 6-7 counties who need an extra match at that particular time before they move into their championship. Of course, that has its downside, as we're seeing now. But that decision to restructure last year and to really bury the likes of Westmead, who, you know, and Carlow, and Brian, I don't have a difficulty whatsoever in talking up about Laois and Offaly here, and I will do that very, very strongly.
But Carlow are in the same position.
And that lack of vision, well, it's the wider issue here. That lack of vision of deciding that we can have a 16-team championship that can compete neck and neck with each other, but at the meantime, we need to drag up four or five counties here. That lack of vision there is what's killing the hurling. And you know, crazily, they decided to change a league system, which was quite helpful to development counties, if I was to classify them as that, and then give preference and benefits to the top-level counties that seriously don't need it. And that probably some of them at the minute don't mind, you know, where they end up in the league, because they know that they have everything in every little bits and pieces in the right way for to approach the championship.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, people with open minds and get away from commitments to tradition and get away with commitments to their own county and to provinces and all of this type of thing, and look at this openly and come up with something. And Brian, you've suggested one that makes an awful lot of sense to me.
Dave, you're right. They've made the balls of the league. They've made it worse. They've made it much worse.
You, that's if I was Allianz, saying. I wouldn't be happy.
No.
I've said this a couple of times. You know, they've made a mess of the National Hurling League.
They have. Just before we finish on a lighter point, lads, Laois players took showers at half time in the Clare game. I'll start with you, Brian. I've never heard of this before.
I've often
gone in and put my hand under the heater, all right, if they were freezing, took off my gloves, but I've never got a hot shower. It sounds like a great idea.
I don't know, is it? Oh God. I think your body be weakened after that, going out in that second half. I'm opening all your pores. Like, I know you're so cold, I know you're desperate to do anything you had. I don't know. I'd love to know the science behind it. It's questionable.
Yeah,
it'd be hard. But I can understand why they would possibly do it. I remember playing Laois in O'Moore Park. The year slips my mind, around 2006 maybe. The spills of rain, there was about 4 or 5 inches of rain in certain parts of the ground on the field. But the game went ahead because there was a match due to be on telly, and it was absolutely ridiculous. I remember coming in at halftime that day and just like, completely stripping down, toweling off, new togs, new socks, and just like pouring the water out of my boots. Like, that's how much water was on the field. So I can certainly have some sympathy, but as I said, I'm not so sure about the science behind it for your body. Would it actually be any good for it?
I have to say, I have a lot of respect for the Laois players that took a warm shower and actually headed back out. I would be thinking of putting my clothes back on.
actually, Brian, I remember that game that you referred to in O'Moore Park, and that certainly was one of those days when it was dangerous for players and it shouldn't have went ahead, or it should have been stopped and not went ahead.
And try marking Carr Healy in that.
Yes, no, you're right. And look, the danger of slipping into a hurley or something like that is just a little bit too risky. Now, look, we don't want to be treated with, you know, with kid gloves here either, but there are sometimes it's clearly a little bit too dangerous. And I suppose there's the opposite as well. You know, certainly on really, really warm days, you would have ice baths with ice towels and that to cool you down and all of those things. And, you know, I think a lot of that is for, you know, individual players. Some players, that works for them, and some it doesn't. And, you know, clearly there is some science behind it in terms of cooling down. But you'd like to know the science before you try something like that, is all I'd say.
What about the showers then, Cheddar? You've skirted around the showers.
No, that's the point I've made, Willie. Oh, yeah. No, that's the point I've made. You'd like to know if there is science about that, and, you know, clearly there's a huge amount around it. I know teams actually that have heaters and that have coolers in dressing rooms, Willie. That's just accepted now. Any of the top teams will have that. And the summertime, they'll have coolers, cooling fans in dressing rooms. And you would need it, to be honest with you. And vice versa, you know, is it worth your while to bring, you know, sure, as cheap as chips? Like, doesn't it make sense to do that? I'm not sure about the science behind the warm-up showers. I think it could, for some players, work the opposite. But, you know, again, like all of these things, I'd rather
the people with the science behind this to explain this, and rather than somebody just speaking traditionally about it.
Yeah, okay. I wonder, did they use shampoo or wash their hair, or did they just warm back up? Right, okay, we'll leave it there. We'll talk to...
Did Derek Corbett take a shower? Go away for that for a second. Did Derek Corbett supposed to take a shower at halftime in all the big games? And that one of the reasons he was late out at halftime, Jackie Turtle was waiting for him.
Oh, I thought he had the runs or something like that, maybe.
No, seemingly he used to... Look, obviously Larry will answer that himself someday, but that, I think that was the excuse that was given for that day, that he was actually having a shower. He changes all his gear at half time.
Brian, I knew of a couple of players that had a very different way of warming up at half time. They'd have a fag or two at half time.
We weren't too far away from my county anyway.
Jason Pilkington could have had three at half time, would he though?
And John Troy.
And Troy, they'd be lighting them off each other. Right, we'll leave it there. We'll come back with David McInerney.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
But let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, so Clare sitting top of Division 1B and their midfielder, David McInerney, joins us on the line now. Clare midfielder, David, how does that sound?
It's a bit different, I suppose, to other years, but just played three league games there and it's definitely new, but liking it so far.
Yeah, so like, I mean, is it a position you play a little bit with your club? Or is it completely new to you? Like, I mean, do you have to learn it all over, like, start from the very start, I suppose?
It's not completely new to me, no. I've played a little bit in midfield and in the forwards at the club, but it is a bit different to club hurling being midfield in county. But it's going good so far. I still feel like I'm finding my feet and have a lot to learn, but it's not alien to me, we'll say. I'm just getting used to some differences.
Right, so if we're to use a soccer analogy, you're like Makaleli in midfield, is that it? And Tony Kelly can kind of go forward?
I suppose you could use that. He's definitely the Messi anyway. I don't know if you'd even give me Makaleli. I'm just trying to just work hard out there and get on the ball as much as I can. But Tony is definitely the glittering partner in the middle of the field. So
is that kind of a thing Brian is trying to bring into the team to get more kind of combative players out there? I see Davy Fitzgerald is at centre forward.
To be honest, he never told me a reason. He just said to me that I was going to play a challenge match or two in midfield and see how it goes. So I haven't got real reasoning off him, but I'm definitely enjoying being out there at the moment. So we'll see how it goes for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's a new lease of life. I read before you said the better the player is, the more I enjoy the challenge of marking them. So I suppose when you're in midfield, what do you see your challenge being?
Well, I suppose your job is very clear-cut when you're full-back, because you know that you just have to beat your man and not let him score, whereas in midfield, you're not really... You have a man to mark, but you have a lot of other jobs too, so you're trying to cut down on space, you're trying to get on the ball yourself. You can afford to be a little bit loose, or you kind of have 2 or 3 seconds to recover without the ball ending up in the back of the net. So there's big differences. But still, I suppose there's brilliant midfielders in the country, and obviously I'm going to enjoy marking them as well, but it's a little bit different to the full back line.
That's the thing, I suppose, is knowing when to drop off your midfielder and go help somebody else, all that kind of thing you have to get used to.
Exactly, and I suppose the other side of it is when you're full back and you actually get the ball yourself, you know you're not going to be tackled from behind or from the sides. Whereas when you're in midfield, you kind of have to have eyes on the back of your head. You can be tackled from all angles. So I suppose it's just adapting to that, really.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It'll be interesting to watch it. Come here, when you won the All-Ireland 2013, it's obviously your first year, and you had a very clear identity. You know, you played a lovely short passing game and a running game, and it was great to watch. And then Davy moved to a bit more of a defensive style, and then Donal and Jerry kind of tried to introduce a bit more of a long ball. What would you call your style under Brian?
To be honest, I think every game is different. You'll be playing some teams where you'll have to set up a style for them. I suppose, looking at Tipperary last year, they play a lovely style of hurling. They play long, they play short, they play a little bit of everything. So I'd like to think that we'd start being able to play that way, kind of a mixture of a style. But I suppose the big thing that the new management is getting into is just that we work harder than anyone else. Style will come itself then once you're working hard. So far it's working in the league, but we'll have a few good games coming up now to see how we're getting on.
Yeah, exactly. Because I saw you were quoted as well by saying that you were, after 2013, the following years, you were saying that you expected to win it without having to earn it. And I think that was something Gerry and Donal maybe identified as well. And that hard work, they probably tried to instill that to you as well.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that quote now. I don't think you win anything without earning it. I just think at that time...
No, after 13, sorry. That was after 13, the years after it.
Yeah, well, I think just at the time we had won an awful lot underage, and then our first year into senior we seemed to win it. And I think lads just thought that that was going to be the case. We were winning. But as we found out afterwards, you don't win anything without serious work rate. So I suppose Fitzy, Donal and Gerry and Brian, they've all been trying to instill a high work rate in us. And I think in the last few years in the championship, especially the team with the highest work rate seems to be coming out with the championship at the end of the year. So we obviously have a step up to make, and I suppose Brian is trying to get that into us.
Yeah, like, it was an incredible start to all of your careers. I mean, winning all the underage titles, you've two under-21s, and then in your first ever year winning the All-Ireland, like, that, you've reached the pinnacle so early. Do you know what I mean? At such a young age.
Yeah, it was strange now, because even my father played for Clare and my grandfather played club hurling, and like, they didn't win much, and then all of a sudden we came along, we just seemed to be winning most competitions we were in. So my grandfather has often said to me how lucky I am, and he says not to take for granted what you've done, because other lads have hurled all their lives and don't have their medals. So I suppose at the time we mightn't have appreciated it enough, but looking back at it now, I kind of do. I appreciate all them medals, and the aim is to try and add a few more if we can.
Yeah, because actually that 2013 team, I was looking at it, there's 9 of that starting team gone now. So it's a completely different
team.
It's a completely different... People often look at Clare and go, will they win another All-Ireland with that team? Like, that team's long gone.
Yeah, and a lot of that team left in the year soon after it, like, so...
After the Wexford match, wasn't it?
Yeah. A lot of lads kind of retired, others got injured, and they never came back from the injuries. They retired as well. And it's funny, I have the picture in my home house, and you look at the whole squad, and like, there was probably a squad of 33 or 4 for that All-Ireland winning team, and there's even more than 9 lads gone off it, so there is a big change in the squad to now, yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose it's the likes of you, the likes of Tony, Kelly, who are seen as, in all our heads, you're still young lads, but you're the experienced fellas now that are having to drive it on.
Yeah, I suppose I'm 27, turning 28 this year, and I'm one of the oldest lads in the panel, so it feels a bit strange now, to be honest. But I can tell you one thing, the body is feeling a little bit older, but you know, it's still just as enjoyable as when you're a young lad.
Yeah, and what about Brian? Like, I mean, I suppose Brian would have been, I think he has a local column, and he would have, you know, his job would have been to critique the previous management teams. Now he has the job for himself. You've worked under him before, obviously, with Mary Eye. He had you as captain in 2015.
I was very lucky, yeah. Brian was actually in UL, and I was only in there for 1 year with him, and we won the Fitzgibbon, so... I had a great year under him, and I really enjoyed him. So when he came in as senior manager, I thought it was going to be more of the same, but he's got in a different backroom team. It's fresh ideas, so positive start so far.
Right, okay, so like, it's maybe his game plan in college is different than his game plan now, or his style of management?
Well, I suppose just college hurling and inter-county hurling are very different,
yeah.
Because most of your college hurlers are on intercounty teams, so they mightn't have much access to you until it's given time. So just from my experiences there, I wouldn't have played a whole lot of the league in college, but Then Brian's job was to kind of gel different lads from different counties, trying to create a team bond and then trying to win the Fitzgibbon competition. And we were very lucky to have, but I think it's completely different to inter-county management, where you have your squad for all the time, you have complete access, and I suppose they all know each other already and everything. So it's different, all right, but I can still see similarities between 2015 and now with him. So
right, okay, very good. So you're a teacher, so you're off for the whole week this week. So, like, I mean, you have it handy. You're a farmer and a teacher, so you have one really difficult job and one really easy job.
Yeah, the farming being the easy one now and the teaching being the hard one, to say. But I didn't have the whole week off now. I just have today, Thursday, and tomorrow, Friday off. So it's a nice two days off to have.
Right, okay. It's not too bad. But I suppose having that career during the summer helps you an awful lot when you talk about your body and getting these knocks and stuff. Like, you're practically a professional athlete for the 3 months.
Yeah, well, it's great. I actually enjoy the farming in the summer because I feel like my body isn't idle and I'm active and I have something to focus on, because it's hard to be, if you were off as a teacher in the summer, it's hard to watch your colleagues head abroad maybe for the summer if you had nothing else to do and you were kind of just hanging around for training and matches. Whereas I find the farming's a great distraction in summer, and it's lovely to be working outdoors. I feel like that when you're active outdoors, training and matches are easier, you feel looser, you feel, I suppose, more zen because you're out in the fresh air all day and stuff. So, you know, I enjoy that now, and I think it definitely helps with the hurling as well.
Right, and you have time to do your recovery, and you know, you can tip away and do little bits and pieces that you need outside of it.
Exactly, yeah. You have your own time, but it's still, you're occupied and you're not bored or anything or hanging around, so it's good that way.
Right, okay. So is the teaching just a little nixer away from the farming, or is it a complete career break?
No, I really enjoy the teaching now. Like, when I came out of secondary school, I went straight into primary teaching and just did a master's then on top of it in sports performance in UL, just for my own hurling career I did it. But I love teaching. I've been teaching in my school now for the last 3 years, and all my staff and all the kids are lovely. So I suppose I have a lovely balance of heading to school from 8 o'clock till about 3 or 4, and then I come home, do a bit of farming, and I just have great routine from it. You eat your lunch at the same time every day, like, so I don't know, I just really enjoy the teaching and working with kids, and then I have the other side of things and training, so it's a busy lifestyle, but I think the routine of it is great for my hurling career and stuff, so yeah. I'm enjoying it.
I was going to say, it is busy, so you're working as a teacher, then you go home, do a bit of farming, and then you grab a sandwich and go off to training and repeat that, I suppose, every day.
Yeah, most days anyway. We have a few days off training and stuff, but they're trying to fill in friends and family and everything then into that as well. But no, it's all enjoyable and all worth it.
Right, come here. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about, because, you know, a lot of people talk about sweepers in hurling and things like that, and being a full back, I was surprised to read you saying that you didn't like sweepers because it functions as an aid to help you manage a forward, but at times it can be confusing. A ball could land in the middle of all three and you don't know who's going for it. I prefer when there's no sweeper because I can find and read space easier just when it's you and your man. I thought that was an interesting one. I thought a sweeper in front of you would have been a nice little bit of insurance.
You think it's insurance, but like, the idea of a sweeper is brilliant, but I find that teams now know how to play against them as well, and you're taken away from your attack too. And I suppose the aim of hurling is to outscore the opposition rather than contain them. So my opinion just on the sweeper is that you're kind of admitting defeat to an opposition's forwards already. If you're playing the sweeper all the time, teams can plan for it. Whereas I do value the sweeper, the odd time to be thrown into a game where they're not expecting you to do it and you can work ball out.
Yeah. But, I remember, actually just done that. I remember thinking Colm Galvin going against Galway that day and it worked really well, just as a kind of a surprise.
That's right. We actually, our full back line was in big trouble there in the first semi-final last year, and Colm came back centre back and he seemed to clean up ball, and maybe Galway just weren't expecting us to do it, or I don't know what happened. Colm was just on fire, but he definitely had to dig us out of a hole that day, and we got to the replay. But then in the replay, we kind of started with a sweeper and maybe Galway has thought about it, and it wasn't going that well. And when we went all out 15-15 and them, we brought it back, and we probably should have kicked on in that game. We were unlucky. But yeah, no, there is a place for sweeping in Ireland, but myself is, I do enjoy the old traditional hurling aspect of it. There is a place for it, and just, but I think when you're using it all the time, it's not as effective.
Not as effective. And obviously, like you say, sweepers can kind of confuse the whole situation back there, in that you don't know who's attacking the ball.
Exactly, but then there's another side to the sweepers, depending on the team. If the team are lording ball down, the sweeper is excellent to have around, because they're the out ball, or they're, you can spoil your man and the sweeper's picking it up. So there's definitely a place for sweepers in hurling and in tactics, but I do enjoy the 15-on-15 games, because it feels more man-on-man and it's more enjoyable, whereas you nearly feel like you're cheating when you have the sweeper personally when you're full back. But no, it has a place, but just sometimes if it's overused, I think teams can cop onto it a little bit.
Yeah, well, you won't have to worry about sweepers this Sunday in Nolan Park anyway, because they're banned.
They're banned. Nobody has them banned down there. No, I think it's kind of 15 sweepers you need in Nolan Park. There's a lot of contact and duels there, but I know it's a good place to go to test yourself and see where you're at.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Come here, I won't take up any of more of your time, David. Thanks very much for taking the call.
Cheers, Willie. Thanks for the call.
And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own. What's tactics? I mean, you've got to make decisions, and you've got to decide what you're going to do, and at the end of the day, you hand it over to the players, and the players play, you know? The game was fast, was furious, it had everything, really, you know, and you don't have too much influence on what's happening. What happened last year, it goes out the window, or the year before, or whenever it was. Tipperary, don't go away. The air is the air. And the game takes on, can very, very often, and take on a life of its own.
All right, the matches I want to have a look at here, lads, are Cork and Limerick and Laois and Carlow. Probably the most interesting ones in my eyes. You could say Dublin Wexford probably are. We might do a bit with Michael Carton on Monday on that one. That's at 5 o'clock. It's on Air Sport, actually, 5 o'clock in Croke Park. But the Cork and Limerick one, this is a really interesting one, in that Cork and Limerick are just like, styles make fights, and we know these two teams come out with classics. There's something about the Limerick jersey that turns Cork from a kind of a passive team that are kind of, you know, skillful, into tenacious kind of warriors. I remember last year in the championship up in the Gaelic grounds, they gave Limerick all they wanted of a cheddar, and then you can come out in the game after against Clare and they were flat again, and then in the game against Kilkenny and Croke Park, they were good in the first half and they were dreadful in the second half. And whatever it is about Limerick, they seem to be able to bring a more consistent, passionate performance out of Cork.
Yeah, that's been the tradition actually going back a long time, but I think that's going to change a little bit, Willie, because I think Limerick style of hurling has changed a little bit. That old tradition up and at them and strike it long and all of that has certainly changed a huge amount under John Kiely and under Paul Kinnerk. So I think that one of the reasons for those maybe clashes in style, which gave us great games, might be falling away a little bit. Obviously, the game is hugely important for both teams. You know, Limerick have set out their stall here clearly. We need to regain ground. We need to regain sense of purpose about ourselves and what we're all about here, and clear away a lot of the old noise that was around the place. And, of course, winning is one way of doing that. Clearly they're in a good shape. They have 4 points. They've beaten 2 heavyweights. They've another game to go here. So, you know, they're in a good place of at least making a quarter-final, semi-final, and then pushing on, similar to what they did last year, even though they did slip up a little bit towards the end of the year last year. Cork are not dissimilar, really. They need to re-establish themselves as well, and you know, we've spoken a number of times about Cork needing a little bit of a physical edge to them. Without going overboard here, you cannot change somebody massively here and, you know, lose all of the things that are good about you and gain some things that you need. You need to hold the things that are good, and their ability to carry ball, ping ball, find the space, find the players and all that's
very, very good. But they do need a little bit more hard edge to them.
When they don't have the ball.
When they don't have, well, even when they do, I think that ability to take people on and to tackle. We spoke last week, Willie, about a Cork centre forward of previous vintage, Gerald McCarthy. They're missing a couple of players like that. They're also missing tight marking backs that can shut down forwards, particularly forwards that move around the field. They're quite good at carrying the ball, but not good enough in terms of the contested ball and winning that ball and just shutting down forwards and that. So the point I'm making is that here's the ideal matches to test your players in these things. This is going to be a good game. And both teams are going to come at it to win it. They're probably going to put out near enough to their best teams. They're still a long ways off of championship pace and all of those things, of course, but it's a good place to test something for what Cork need here. So I think that it'll be a really, really interesting match. And of course, both teams are to need the pints as well. Cork need the pints. They've lost a match already, and it is important that they get momentum here. And it's really, really important for Cork, I think, for Kieran, to fix the things that have hurt Cork over the last couple of years. Obviously, they're very, very close. Obviously, they've got some incredible players. I've made this point before. I think if Cork win in All-Ireland, they could be the next dominant team. They'd have definitely got their underage structures and all of those things right. But if they fix some things in the senior team, they're going to be a serious, serious force as they go along. But they just haven't done that yet. And going back to that point, here's the ideal match to start those things out.
The few places they need to strengthen, Brian, it was interesting the last day, Tim O'Mahony, who I've criticised a lot at number six. He was at right half back and Bill Cooper was centre back. For me, that's a very positive change for them. And then you could have Mark Coleman at number seven. And then you're looking at that half back line. And half back lines are very, very important in hurling.
Yeah, certainly. And the big call they've made actually is Robert Downey going to full back.
Yes.
Played a minor All-Ireland at full forward. Big, tall, rangy man. He must be about 6 foot six, 6 foot seven. And he's hurling quite well there at the moment. So it'll be interesting. They need a bit of patience with him and Tim O'Matney. And I think that was maybe an issue last year as well. Tim O'Matney looked like he was poised to be centre back. One bad game, good luck. Bye. So these are young players. It needs a bit of bedding in time. And I suppose it's defending as a collective unit is probably a wider issue for Cork as well. The Damien Catalan maybe out into the half back line as well. They were looking at that. Mm. You maybe pushing Mark Coleman up to midfield and Darragh Fitzgibbon at centre forward. They've definitely flirted with those couple of ideas in the opening rounds of the league. So you can see what they're trying to do. Maybe a more steelier half back line. Big, tall, rangy men, kind of thou shall not pass kind of a approach. But as I said, to me, it's that defensive unit. And that starts often with your half-forward line, even your full-forward line at times. Half-forward line dropping deep. And we've seen that happen a huge amount. Daniel Kearney doing that a huge amount last year. And bear in mind that he has actually stepped away from the game now at the moment. So he will be a loss in that particular role. And I distinctly remember him doing that in Limerick last year in the Gaelic grounds.
I think he was man of the match in that game. He set the tone.
He was, yeah. Yeah, he really did. And, so that talks about it doesn't have to be a big giant of a man. Just honest work rate and selflessness for the team. And as I said, that defending as a unit. But there's probably a couple of wider issues with Cork in general, obviously. And, I think it was John Fogarty I read in the Examiner during the week and talking about some of the, Kieran Kingston was quite not happy, and same with John Myler, with the way the game is actually refereed in Cork in terms of the club games, that it's too soft. The fouls are being blown for technical fouls. And
really?
In essence, then, what's happening is obviously that's filtering through. They're not producing essentially tough enough county players, because of the way the game is played. And then you have things like Donal Oak consistently whinging about the spare hand in hurling, and the way that the game is not being refereed properly because, it's this spare hand, it's not allowed. Like, it's a bit, I don't know, from that perspective. Look, he's technically right. I won't disagree with him on that. He is technically right. There is an issue with people coming in and slapping down the hands of other people. Yeah, grand, fair enough. But it's not an issue that needs to be, consistently put forward by him. It's not a blight on the game as he's trying to imply. plus, you know, he's trying to remove maybe a hugely physical element of the game, you know, that the top teams are doing. You know, that's what Limerick are doing, that's what Kilkenny are doing, that's what Galway did when they were at the top when they won the All-Ireland. Similarly, that's what Tipperary are doing. They're getting in, they're getting physical, it's getting up close and personal, it's becoming a battle as opposed to maybe that free-flowing hurling that Cork like. So I think that rhetoric from Don Logue doesn't help the overall, you know, approach to hurling down in Cork. Also, as a little small thing, and it might be a throwaway thing, but at the same time, Cork are one of the counties that are actually backing this black card coming in. There must be one of the only few. I don't know, is it linked to the fact that Frank Murphy is on the rules committee, and, you know, obviously the politics of that the county board are going to back him in that that regard. But right, you know, all these things do filter down, and it just lends itself to the reason we consistently say that Cork are too nice a team. I tell you one thing, that Cork team in 04 and 05, they weren't a nice team. You know, they were tough as nails. They really had warriors in that back line and where they needed them, real workhorses. Like Brian Murphy wouldn't spare you, Dermot O'Sullivan, you know, animal, you know, John Gardner led you when they need a rose. So Pat Mulcahy, cornerback. Like, these boys were tough as nails. And that's when Cork were at their top. I think they need to maybe look at that element as well.
That's a very interesting one that I never even thought of, is the way the club game is refereed. Because what's jumping at me straight away is JJ Delaney. And after Richie Hogan got sent off in the All-Ireland final, he explained on the money, he says, you have to remember, Woolley, I was saying to him, why is it only the Kilkenny players that won't see that as the sending off? Everyone else is. He says, because that wouldn't be a sending off in club hurling at Kilkenny. Do you know? And it just kind of, while I was criticising him, and I never really thought of it like that, that's just the hurling they're used to getting stuck in, and they're not. So, like, I mean, I never thought of that Cork aren't producing these players because there isn't a need for them in club hurling in Cork, if that's a fair point.
No, there is some relevance to that point, and JJ is absolutely right. I'm obviously learning that from my own experience at the minute. The level of competitiveness and combative type players in Kilkenny is very, very tough, and it's refereed accordingly. And you know, you are right, then they produce that type of players. I'm not so sure if that's the only reason,
and there are
some reasons for being much, much stricter refereeing. Look, we had it in our own county, we needed it at the time. The problem with these things is it goes too far and then it stays there and it doesn't come back to the sort of the centre ground here where you know, games are, the game is a warrior game, let's referee it like a warrior game. Of course,
just show across you for one second, I fully agree with you. The thing is, I think they're tough, but not, like, it's not dirty.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's the distinction.
Oh, Brian, without a doubt, that's a really, really good point. There would be no time whatsoever for cheap shots, cheap players, and you would be called out very, very quickly on that. In terms of the toughness and all of that, it would be absolutely massive, but not that, you know, not no badness, Brian, and I fully agree with that, and it would be refereed accordingly. And look, if you want to go back to Cork and let's just talk about Cork themselves, you know, you go back to John Horgan and Martin O'Doherty, and you named a good man in Pat Mulcahy. I think he's part of the current Cork management team. You know, Pat will definitely put steel into this, and I think they are looking for that type of player, but there's no point in looking for steel and then losing the quality of your hurling. You know, you need both, obviously, or you need the mix right and all of those things. And, you know, it's interesting that they're looking at two big wing backs. Are they thinking of Limerick down the line here? Because, you know, you need to be able to negate that the strength that they bring there as well. Rob Downey has been an interesting one, Brian. I do agree. He looks to have fixed that. He's a typical big Cork player. If you look at Pat McDonald, go back to Martin O'Doherty, go back to any of those type of Cork full backs. They were certainly imposing physically on the edge of the square and that. And I think the game has changed a little bit now. You know, there's no point in having hard men on your back line, with very, very poor mobility, because you'll be found out very, very quickly in that as well. But I suppose speak generally about that. Cork need physical edge, but, you know, obviously that meant in the right way. But they definitely need better tackling and better marking defenders. And Brian, I absolutely agree with you that the most crucial thing that they need is better tackling forwards, because it's not necessarily the tackling that
that's needed here. Their forwards are players that like to receive the ball in open space, and the best way you can get the ball in open space is to tackle the clearance from the opposition. So it's landing on your defence, and your defender's there to get into open ground and now able to ping the right ball to space up the field. So you're not just necessarily giving a tackling performance for your defence, you're actually giving it for the type of ball that you want back up the field. And I think, you know, Cork have a huge amount of quality, real skillful players, but if they get those parts of the game right, I think they're serious contenders to win in All-Ireland.
Kieran Kingston was interviewed around the time he got the job, and he said, this is what he said: when I was there before, we spoke about getting consistency, not alone from game to game, but within games. We have a lull from game to game and in games. That has been an issue for a while, and that's something we must try to eradicate and reduce to a minimum. And this makes sense to me, because they don't have combative players naturally, Brian. So it's okay against Limerick and the Gaelic grounds. They're coming off, I think it was a hammering against Tipperary, and their backs are to the wall. So you'll get a performance out of lads that don't necessarily, you know, it's not natural for them to be that intense, and you get it for a game, and then they'll go out the next day and that kind of same backs to the wall attitude won't be there, and then that's falling down again. And even I mentioned at the start of this, it even fell down within the same game against Kilkenny, where they were all you know, going well in the first half and then fell apart. They need, regardless of who your six most skillful forwards are, unless you find a mix and unless you find lads whose game it is, you don't have to get them wound up to the last to do this. That's their natural game anyways. Maybe they won't fix that consistency.
Yeah, and like, look, if you look and burrow down and look at the actual individuals involved, Patrick Horgan, you know, obviously gifted hurler, not probably naturally adept at defending when he, you know, he's trying to defend a cornerback or whatever, and he's actually been sent off a couple of times because he's gone in with big hits, you know, and got it wrong, you know, completely no intent to hurt anyone, but, you know, has caught people wrong in tackles. Alan Cadigan, another guy, huge pace to burn, absolutely, we've seen it happen so many times, burning cornerbacks. Another man that wouldn't be probably renowned for his defending. They're trying Shane Kingston in full forward now, trying to offer maybe something different from that perspective. You know, Aidan Walsh, we've talked about. Connerly Han, another man, brilliant at all, you know, brilliant attacking type of player. And then you have Seamus Harnady, then, as I know, he has it all. You know, I think Seamus Harnady is a brilliant go to guy, fantastic player. So, you know, they're bringing Dara Fitzgibbon up, as I said, into the forward line, maybe to bring a little bit more of that perspective and try and overturn teams. So you can see teams around the country trying to do that. And you see Dave Fitzgerald now gone up to centre forward for Clare. You see Chris Crummy gone up centre forward for Dublin at the moment. I know they're only trying this out in the league, but they are looking at that alternative when they don't have natural players that can, you know, maybe there might be natural scoring forwards.
They've identified the issue,
Yeah, they've identified the issue and they're trying to find ways around it. So it'll be interesting how Cork are trying to do that.
What's interesting about that, Brian, as well, if I was to come in there, like, most teams have just moved on to now the possession, you know, passing type game. If you don't have a good tackling game plan, and it starts, you're right, if you doesn't start with your 15, you're not going to be able to get yourself back into the game and turn over ball and that sort of stuff. You're missing an absolute key component here. So if all the other teams, you know, main way of transferring the ball is to work the ball through the hands, ping the pass, if you don't have a good game plan, and some of these things is one of the things you would look at in this is how hard are they working to track players? Not necessarily get into tackle, just track the player and put him under pressure back to field. And you name the number of Cork players and you never see them do that, or rarely see them do that. So the turnover of the ball is never going to happen, even if you don't get that right, let alone the speed to the tackle. How quickly do they get to the tackle to shut down the play? Certainly there's a lot of work, I think, for Cork to do that. And considering that the Limericks and the Galways and Wexford definitely are going to move the ball through the hands, if you don't have a good tackling game plan, you're in trouble, I think.
Yeah. What about Declan Dalton there, just to finish up on Cork? He seems to be, is he more of a target man or a scorer? He's not scoring heavily in any of the games I've been trying to track, I've been kind of tracking him.
Yeah, at inter-county level, you know, it's just a step up in pace and intensity all round. You know, he's been obviously very good for underage for Cork. He's been obviously very good for his club. Bear in mind that is an intermediate club, I learned, without being disrespectful, but it is, you know, it's not the same level of intensity. And But he's a big, strong, rangy guy, and again, he probably needs a bit of time to try and mould himself into intercounty hurling. I think he's more than capable of making that step up. He could offer something different, but you know, Cheddar has hit the nail on the head there. You know, you need players to be able to do everything now with intercounty game. Look, I was brutal myself for years at tackling. I'm still not great at it, but I'm certainly more conscious of it. I know I'm coming towards the end of my game, but
that just makes you feel guiltier for not doing it now that you're conscious of it. You're better off being ignorant.
Yeah. But that's a fact, because you look back and you go, oh my god, embarrassing almost, you know, the way the game has gone now. But I'm definitely more conscious, as Cheddar said, like, you know, much more conscious of trying to track players and turn the ball over and the importance of that. But you know, it's tough as a forward. I think JJ kind of alluded the other day, you know, especially in winter hurling, you have to win ball, you have to win your own ball, you have to try and turn a man, you maybe a third tackler coming in and try and get that ball over the bar. So it's not easy being a forward.
No, it's not. Okay, so that Cork Limerick game is the deferred game on TG Cahir on Sunday. The other game quickly, lads, we'll look at is Laois Carlow. This is a relegation battle, let's be honest. Whoever wins this will avoid the game against Westmeath. Without being disrespectful to Westmeath, they're going to finish at the bottom of that. Colin Bonner made a comment after the last game. He says, how many beatings will it take for them to lose their interest? I don't think it will happen, as we're trying to get players to focus on their own personal development and look at themselves as intercounty players. And it just got me thinking, Cheddar, how do you keep a team motivated when they take a few heavy beatings like that?
It's difficult, and you got to be really, really honest with your players and with your team, you know, well in advance, and set out your goals and all of that. And I'm interested in that column said that, because, you know, that's certainly the way of doing it, is personal development of players, motivate them to be the best players that they can be. And along the journey, if you get all the bits and the parts together, that you can get wins and build some momentum as you go along. It is very, very difficult, because you're working off of, you know, if you're to look at your serious players in your panel, you're probably looking after maybe 15, 16, or lucky if you have 20. And, you know, I just keep going back to that point. It's the strength and depth of your panel. And therein lies a problem for Laois on at the weekend. I think maybe 5 or 6 or 7 of their first team that are out injured at the minute. And look, that for Kilkenny, Kilkenny are able to do without all the Ballyhale to their own players at the minute and still get some wins under their belt and get performances and that. It's very, very different for these counties. You just don't have that strength and depth to be able to cover for that. Nonetheless, look, the game between Laois and Carlow is serious a game. Playing in that playing at that level is where you want to be. I think you're being very, as I said earlier on, you're being very honest with your players. Look, we are going to ship a beating or two here. But look, there's one other thing I want to make here, Willie. There's been a number of times in the last couple of years when some of the top teams shipped bad beatings, and nobody came along and said, oh, we can't ship beatings here. And you know, you need to toughen up and just take these things on the chin and have some confidence and go out the next day again and look at your performance again. It's all about performance, really, rather than result, of course, when you're speaking to your players and that. But look, let's just focus in on this game. It is hugely important, obviously, because it gives you that platform to play, to test yourself against teams that, if you're in the Leinster Championship next year or this year, you know where you stand, and you can build some confidence in that. And if I look at even Laois's performance down in Ennis last weekend, would have been very, very good. Of course you can win to win the matches. You don't go down and travel down there and just say, oh, we're all right, we'll come within 9 or 10 points of them, that'll be the great. You know, no team or nobody has that sort of an outlook on a game. Nonetheless, when you look back on it, that was a good performance. And I think the difference in the score difference between the two counties is, I think Laois might be minus 26, Carlow or minus 48. Now that could have to do with some of the teams that you're playing as well. As I say, or you know, a number of times, this league is hard to actually get any sort of facts out of, because you don't know where, if it's given players or who's injured or who isn't playing or what teams they've played and that. But it is hugely important to both teams, particularly the way the league is structured now, that, you know, this is your first chance to stay up. You might have a second chance, you know, it's likely to be Westmeath in terms of the relegation final. You might have a second chance, but staying up there is absolutely crucial to the development of your players. And to you be able to say to your players, you have a chance of walking onto the field, like Westmeath players last Sunday. I've got to commend them the way they performed last Sunday. Took on Cork, showed obviously respect to Cork and the Cork hurling, but not on the field. Took them on and had a right go off of them. And Westmeath players, you know, just you asked the question, how did Westmeath players feel walking away from Cusack Park last Sunday? I tell you how
Dowda felt. We let one bloody slip through our fingers here. We should have beaten Cork. Isn't that a great boost for the next day and next year for any Westmeath player or any young Westmeath person in the ground to be able to look out there and look at Westmeath players able to go toe-to-toe with Cork players and come away with, you know, a good performance? And I think that's what it's about, Willie.
Yeah, I think I'll throw this one to you, Brian. I was disappointed with Laois in the second half at the weekend. I thought they were great in the first half and they put themselves in a position where I thought they could potentially create a huge upset. And then with the wind that persisted with Ross and Young Bergen in the full forward line, a two-man full forward line being covered with a sweeper with a gale force wind, and it wasn't sticking it with Ross. Ross couldn't get it up into his hand and Bergen wasn't in the game at all. And I thought, surely to God, with a gale force wind like that, that they might have done away with the sweeper and put in a man that might have been able to get the ball to stick a little bit.
Yeah, and look, Paddy Purcell had a little bit of success in the sweeper role and he got a point. And but I kind of agree with what you're saying, because there comes a point where you have to have a go in hurling, you know, and it has been statistically shown. You might win certain games in isolation, but it's very hard to consistently win these big games without actually having a go. And as you said, they could have changed it up a little bit. I know Laois are short a few players at the moment and they're trying to leave maybe the likes of Ross King on the field, his huge experience, and has done it on big days. But maybe obviously that could be looking at maybe bringing him out to the half forward line or whatever, just changing the personnel inside. But I know, moving away from Laois for a second, like, I was actually down at the Carlow Dublin game last weekend as well, and it's just the point here is in relation to tactics. Against the wind, Carlow played 14 men behind the ball. They played one forward, their star forward, Marty Kavanagh. He was the only forward within the 65 for the vast majority of that first half. And on two occasions, Carlow players had the ball and had no one to hit it to, because Marty Kavanagh had filtered out, maybe tackling or whatever. And they actually had nowhere to hit it to. So one stage, the Carlow lad just hit it into the corner. It was like rugby almost, looking for touch. Jeez. Didn't quite make it. And in the next case, I think it was Jack Kavanagh, hit the ball down the line and chased it. Now, he actually ended up winning the free. It was a stupid giveaway by Shane Barrett. He cut across his run.
Cool Cullen.
But honestly, like that. It was like I was dumbstruck. Like, I saw it happen once, but twice was just unbelievable. Now, you can say statistics wise, there were 4 points to six at half time. They were after playing into a gale force win. They had negated Dublin. Yes and no, because like this second half onslaught never came. You know, this what I predicted. I said, right, okay, they've put themselves, they obviously, as a group of players, they understand this system and they know they're trying to negate Dublin in the first half.
Yeah.
And now it's going to be all systems go in the second half. But Dublin just upped their work rate. They ran at them. They just overpowered them. It's exactly what we're talking about in terms of, you know, with Laois. You know, Clare just found a way around the sweeper. They ran at them. They drew scores. Aaron Shanahan obviously was a big part in that. He really troubled when they went direct. He really troubled Frank Flanagan when he went in there.
Oh,
so, like, you know, I suppose I'm probably a little bit more traditional in my approach to hurling. I'm not saying that systems don't have a point to play. Of course, they're hugely important, but there has to be some sort of, you know, real attacking approach, a real kind of, you have to have a go at a certain point.
Yeah, I don't mind them doing that, Cheddar, if it's normal conditions. That's their game plan. Lennon came on and he's a great sweeper. I love watching him on the ball. He always uses it well. But when you have a gale force wind, that's like an extra man as it is. Like, if your defenders can't handle their men with a gale force wind behind them, and, you know, not to face the extra man, you know, at the other end when you have that advantage, that's what disappointed me. That they never really looked like, you know, taking non-Clare and making them worry.
Yeah. Well, look,
first half, great.
I know, but that's fine. You know, after the event, you know, Laois have went, and I've been that soldier. I went to Ennis a couple of times, and we've just been completely overrun and overpowered. And I suppose you just want to stay in the game as long as you can. But I think there's two different things about that, Willie. I think if you play out and out defensive sweeper, so in other words, your sweeper simply stays in the D and he's cutting off those diagonal balls and he's assisting with double tackling and he's assisting with carrying the ball out of the defence, which is, you know, really, you know, a real defensive sweeper. Then that mightn't make sense. Yeah. But I still think you can play that extra player either coming back into your defence or from the defence with a much more offensive threat, which is what, incidentally, Wexford did the very same thing. I wasn't at matches on Sunday, but I was listening to a number of radio stations and I heard Michael Walsh on Kilkenny radio station
you know, laughing at Davey playing a sweeper with the wind, but he actually wasn't. He was actually playing an offensive player coming off the half-back line. And clearly it worked for Wexford. Now, I know there was other reasons that the big hitter players that came on had a big difference for Wexford.
Yeah. But Wexford, a lot of ball to the to
but
the
some teams will be doing different things, Willie. Wexford were obviously practicing what they're going to be doing in the summertime and not necessarily just simply going for the game, even though it did work for them. But I think the quality of the top teams to be able to ping the ball around the place with or against the wind. I mean, we're talking about 30, 40 metre passes here with players with the mobility to be able to move into space and all of that. If you completely take out your defensive screen in something like that, there is just going to be one result. I know what Brian is saying. I think there's a middle ground there, and it's called, you know, it's an offensive game. You change from a defensive game to an offensive game. That doesn't mean that you throw out absolutely everything part of your plan from the first game to the first half to the second half. You can't do that. And now it's different. It depends on who you're playing, and it depends on your team. And if you don't have a target player inside, you mentioned Declan Dalton a minute ago, you look at Father O'Neill's play to play, didn't really try and create a one and one inside. At that level of intermediate hurling, that's a great thing to do with the likes of the quality of Declan Dalton. But if you don't have a target man inside that can hold up ball and then work off the place and that, maybe that's not the right way to play it in. It depends on what you have and who you're playing against.
Yeah, but Leash definitely didn't have it the last day. Just the point of the using the sweeper, what drives me up the wall is the team that dictates the sweeper then goes hits it down to the other sweeper. If you're dictating the sweeper, you must know you're going to face another one.
I've seen that a number of times.
It does my head in. Whatever about the team that's shocked, okay, this isn't us, we have to change everything and now we're not used to it and we're going to hit it up there. The one and that's why I was a huge criticism of Waterford when they started it. The amount of balls they'd hit then to the other spare man, and they're the ones dictating these tactics. It was madness. But I need to finish on this one, lads, and it's Cathair Healy. I was talking to him during the week, and like, Cathair's back in with the footballers. I'll go to you, Brian, because you marked him. And Cathair's a stalwart, and anyone in Laois and probably further afar know how committed Cathair is. And he lives in London and he drives home. He's his most committed fella you'll ever come across. And Cathair wanted to go back in with the hurlers, and Eddie Brennan said no to him. Now, Eddie Brennan wanted him last year, and Cathair hadn't played football in a long time and said that his commitment was going to be to footballers this year. I don't know, is Eddie annoyed with Cathair over that? But Eddie's doing a lot of talking about lads not committing to go back in, and all the about their, you know, their attitudes and how disappointing it is. And here you have a fella like Cathair Healy who wants to go back in after missing out in last year, and he turns around and says no to him. I just can't get my head around that, because every single hurler in that panel will know Cahir's commitment and will know his quality. And the idea, Eddie kind of thought that Cahir coming over and back might disrupt things a little bit. Like, for me, I wouldn't really accept that excuse. I respect Eddie and he's done a great job, but I'd be very disappointed with that a player like Cathair Healy has been turned away.
Yeah, if that's exactly what it is, and you have to, obviously, you know, you're getting it from the horse's mouth there with Cathair, like, that is disappointing. Because look, I think one of the big things in management is to try and ensure that you get the best players available, and particularly, Cheddar has alluded to this a good few times, it's no disrespect, you need everyone you possibly can in the likes of Laois and Offaly and Westmeath and all these. And as you said, everyone knows Cathair's commitment to the game and to himself and to the club. It's phenomenal. He's a real warrior on top of everything else, but he's a real role model. Like, you couldn't ask for someone better, and probably not well enough known around, doesn't get the national recognition for the type of player and man that he is. And look, he's obviously, in those situations, he's not going to be there midweek. I don't know how many sessions Laois do during the week, how many he's actually going to end up missing then, and is he only available then to turn up maybe if they do choose the Thursday? You know, is he actually missing the vast majority of it, and Eddie's not comfortable with that? Or, as you said, is it more in the fact that he turned them down last year? So, you know, I suppose Eddie has his reasons as well, but on the face of it, you'd expect that there would be some sort of compromise there. Because I tell you one thing, the likes of the quality of Cathair Healy, and you know the commitment he has off the field, you'd be bending over backwards, and you'd be absolutely, you know, delighted to see him come back on board.
What's your thoughts, Cheddar? He would have come home for you when I'm sure I could probably predict your thought, yeah, on Cathair anyways, but he would have been travelling over and back with you when he was hurling.
Yes, you would. Look,
Brian has explained, you know, Cahir much better than I can. You know, a complete warrior in hurling and football. I'd probably take it any sport that he would play. You know, the character of the man is just something else, is all I will say. I've seen an awful lot of players. I've probably seen nobody to surpass that. The willingness to win, the willingness to put, you know, to put his team ahead of himself, and all of those things are just unsurpassed about the man. I just simply could not speak enough about him. But I don't know the details. I genuinely
I know the details.
I'm telling you the details.
I know the details from Cahir's perspective. But like, look, you know, Eddie in a proper debate, he would get his opportunity to give his side of it.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Brian. And I say, look, you know, you've got.
We don't do balance on this show, lads.
No, we don't, Willie. But I tell you what, we do honesty.
Yeah.
And I'll say, you know, it wouldn't take much for me to speak up, Cahir here. I think everybody knows where I would stand on that. But equally, in terms of honesty, you know, maybe Eddie has a different view of you know what's needed in terms of leash and all of those things. You've got to respect that as well.
Yeah, no, and I do.
I certainly will say that, you know, Cahir in a dressing room, even only on match day, would be hugely important and beneficial to the team, even if he wasn't playing. And that would be a huge benefit. But I've also got to respect that, you know, Eddie might have different views on how things go. And it goes back to that issue, I suppose, Brian, that, you know, all of these counties, you just need everybody really playing for you, particularly those warrior-type players, because they are motivational in a dressing room and they do stimulate other players to, you know, give their best performance.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. We'll leave it at
this. Opens up that, yeah, this conversation, if you have time, that you were talking about, you know, the Antrim approach, the football approach.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, like, you know, obviously the football manager has changed up their system and they only train three times in the week, allowing, you know, to get more in one session, to do the weights at the start of the session and go out and do whatever running or football they need to do. But obviously by only meeting three times a week, it just frees up the players essentially for their rest of their lives, you know, family, life, work, whatever it is, the commitment doesn't seem as large, and they've obviously got a good few players back on board now this year, and, you know, it makes it a lot more accessible for people. And I think that is the crux of it, because, like, you know, everyone gives up county, and I know you talk about the pace of it and all that, but it also, a huge part of giving up county would be, it is actually the commitment, you know, the six nights of the week essentially that you end up giving to intercounty hurling, almost seven usually. So, like, it is a novel approach from Antrim, and it's something I definitely think, and again without being too disrespectful, if you're not going to win in All Ireland, you know, sometimes you can see why certain players step away from it, because they're like, I'm not prepared to give up six nights of the week to not win All Ireland, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely, I think there's merit in what they're doing.
No,
and that lends itself to, maybe with, you know, it's just, you know, when you talk about Cahir Healy, you know, if he is missing maybe two or three sessions during the week, is that too much of the week's training programme for Eddie Brennan for Cahir to be missing?
Yeah, well,
maybe that's a reason. Well, I don't know.
That's the point I'm making on Cahir. I respect Eddie, the job he's doing. I respect you'd respect his decision, and that's fine. I would strongly disagree with that decision. I couldn't disagree with it more.
I can see
where Eddie's coming from. A lad just coming back at weekends, not being there during the week. He can't be there during the week. He just could come home for matches. For me, with Cahir Healy, that's enough for me. You know, so I strongly disagree with Eddie. I'm not attacking Eddie over this. I strongly disagree with him.
Just for balance there, look, it's not every second weekend. You know, football and hurling takes place every weekend.
But he was going to choose the hurlers this year.
Sorry, that's a different
situation. Yeah, he only went with the footballers because the hurlers turned him down.
Sorry, that's a different. Yeah, that's different. And I genuinely don't know. Even I'm obviously a Leash man. I genuinely don't know that.
Yeah, no, that's what happened anyway. So that, look at that. That's
sorry.
All
there's one
to
other
see.
Little point there on the Antrim football. Look, sometimes, sometimes your needs are higher than high performance preparation. And one of those things may very well be, you know, Lenny Harbison is the person we were speaking about here. Very, very. Experienced man knows about things. His need at the minute may very well be to get some experienced players back here, and that he's willing to give up a little bit of high performance culture to do that, and that might serve Antrim better. And if that's the decision that was made based on, you know, good logic, and that's a good decision, it would fly in the face a little bit of
real high performance, where you're actually talking about individualised programmes per player because of the needs analysis that you have done on them, and to be able to do that. And, you know, sometimes it might work to do a weight session before a training programme, but if you were talking about real in-depth programmes for players, it probably wouldn't work, to be honest with you. But I'm just making that point that, you know, it's just too simplistic, I think, to say that we'll just run with three and so on. Yeah. If at an inter-county level, I would be amazed if any of the top 10 counties having an individualised programme with separate S&C people looking after the two or three different groups within that to get to where you want to get to. But I just go back to that point, you might have a higher priority here, and that may very well be, I need to get all the best players in the county on the field for me to establish a foothold here to move on to where I want to get to.
Yeah, just in case anybody's confused with the Antrim stuff, is that Lenny Harbison, the Antrim football manager, instead of training 5 nights, he trains 3, and he combines the weight with the nights that they're out on the field. So he'll do the weights first, and then they'll go out on the field and maybe do an hour and an hour. It's a bit of a longer session, but the benefit he sees of that is that they have the next night off and they don't have to be getting stressed out about going to the gym. I would love and to talk about
will,
it.
And I think that, yeah, no, it's a good point. And just to finish on that, like, Tedder, I think, hits the nail on the head there. Like, it will enable players to play intercounty for longer, you know, essentially, because they can fit their lifestyle around the intercounty at that. But look, it's the catch 22 situation.
But I do want to finish this, Brian. You know, you go back to the point about how do you stimulate players to play and so on and so on. Well, yeah, you're certainly not telling that group that we're going to win an All-Ireland, because you won't. All of the top conditioning people will tell you that this is not the right way to go, and, you know, we've got to believe that science. And I'll throw in one other little thing into this. We're talking about amateur players and too much in that, and I do accept that, you know, when you settle down, things do change in life, and you change jobs, and you look for you know, you're probably moving up the ladder in your job and all of that sort of thing. But you look at all of the marathon runners in Ireland and how much and how often they train. They're all amateurs.
But there's no physicality. They're just running. They're not taking hits and taking dead legs.
You talk to Danny McDade, who won 7 or 8 you know, he's an old man now, and he was doing 30 and 40 years ago.
They're not getting hurls broken off their legs, yeah, Cheddar.
The thing I take up on that point, Cheddar, is that I fully agree with you that there is amateur athletes out there and just people running for fun. And
yeah, but non-contact sports,
yeah, there's an element of non-contact, but there's also, you know as well as anyone, Cheddar, the issue I always had with intercounty training is you're planning your whole day around it. You're leaving work early, you're getting to training an hour beforehand to get physio or foam rolling or hit freeze or hit silence, whatever. You get physio after, you have a team meeting, you get a meal, you don't get home till 11 or, depending on where you are, 12 o'clock at night. The whole evening is gone.
Yeah.
You can, if county managers would actually only train 3 times a week, put the onus back on players to hit the gym twice a week or go to the ball alley. I think that's essentially what this man is doing. Okay, he's combining the weights to make sure that everyone's doing it. But like, if you actually only train 3 times a week and put the onus back on players, that there's, you know, a bit of, you know, as I said, onus on them to go to the gym, they'll have more time, they'll enjoy it more. I'm a firm believer. Maybe it's because I'm caught up I'm an old school, I played in a different era, and that obviously I play a club now, but I just think there's a huge part of that. I think that's why intercounty hurling, so many people are younger now playing the game, because of this meeting up five, six times a week. I fully get Cheddar's point. You're telling Antrim that they're not going to win All-Ireland. Let's be honest, they were never, no disrespect, they're not going to win All-Ireland anyway. And then you have all people turning away from the game because they're not willing to do 6 nights of the week. So there is that balance there, I think.
Yeah. What I used to hate, just to finish up on this point, and we're definitely finish up on this point, lads, because I had this Antrim as a talking point for the start of the show. You took so long over the black card, I just skipped over it, and you made sure you found a way to bring it up at the end of the show. This show is going to be about an hour and a half, so anyone listening, this is not my fault. I've tried to keep it a little bit shorter. But what used to annoy me was whatever about going down from Dublin and going training and doing a hard training session and then landing back up to Dublin late. Then you wake up the next morning and you go to work. And then that night you have to go to the gym after work, and then you get home from the gym and you have to make yourself something to eat, and it could be 9 o'clock. the day off after the training session, I see a huge value in Lenny combining the two. I take your point, Cheddar, the sports science wouldn't say, definitely not in the early stages where you're building muscle, your legs would be too dead altogether. It would be counterproductive. But when you're at the maintenance stage, I was thinking maybe there is a bit of value in, you know, maybe doing an hour before or after the session of the weights and combining the two, and then having a completely free day the next day. Spend it with your family if you have a family, spend it with your, you know, girlfriend, whatever, wife, whatever way you want to spend it in your own personal time. And I would see more of a life, you know, training balance, potentially the advantages of that.
Nobody would disagree with that, will you? And look, that's what happens in a lot of instances. I do think, Brian, that the narrative around teams training night and day and all of that, there may have been some, but it's certainly not as bad as I think it's made out to be. But look, the gym is hugely important. You know, you're taking, you're probably going to have three or four players that have come into the team. They're now moving on to a real specified gym program, whether it's a strength program or whether, you know, there's a whole different myriad of things here for different players. Form and technique and that is hugely important. You could spend 3 years in a gym and be doing the wrong things, and you're never overseeing properly. I know technology is there now. I know you can do little feeds and that into the gym and all of those type of things. But there are some reasons why it makes good sense to do these things, particularly with young players coming in. I do take the point. I think, you know, look, managers would be looking at that, is all I'll say to you, Woolley. And one of the reasons that they look at it, the main thing is not actually fatigue from training. It's mental fatigue from going too many times to the training field, I find in myself. That's one of the things that sort of wears down players a little bit. It's not actually what you do there. It's just actually going maybe too often. And look, you can do little things like that around the county. And this is where development plans come in hugely. So has your county done a screening of all your players who are 14, 15 years of age, identified what they need to do to prepare them properly for gym programs when they reach 19, 20, to when they come into senior teams? So then there's not a need around form, technique and all, and looking at all of those things. It's a much wider and more holistic look at the preparation of hurling in your county than just simply looking at your senior team. I think if that was done, then that would open up a whole new vista about how many training sessions you need to do.
Okay, well, we're definitely all agreeing on that, so that we won't talk about it. Before you go away, there's one final word
I will make on that. I think consistency between conditioning and hurling management teams, from management team to management team, is important. You will hear different focus from different conditioning people coming in. And I think, you know, a proper handover and a proper, I suppose, selection process from management teams to management teams by a county board, with the knowledge and expertise of how to be able to talk about these things, might be important. So then, you know, a new management team doesn't come in and put the foot to the floor when maybe there's no need for that at all.
Okay, that's always time for me. Back on Monday. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Killing me.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.